Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So now Posey ranges away, and Ballinger throws it so high!
The crowd was going crazy, and there's not much in life that's better than that.
What it's going to be is we all love good, crisp, clean baseball and guys that are going to be always prepared.
You're listening to Garlic Fries and Baseball Guys on the 95.7 The Game Podcast Network.
Hello there! Welcome into episode 168 of the Garlic Fries and Baseball Guys podcast. Just myself, Sam Lubman, here for this one. Steven Rizzotto not available to join us on this episode of the podcast. And again, I know we haven't really been as frequent as getting these episodes out lately. Steven Rizzotto's been much more involved in producing Willard and Dibbs lately, which has changed his schedule quite a bit. And unfortunately, him being an afternoon producer, me being a morning show producer, our schedules kind of run anathema to each other, which makes finding time for us to sit down and actually record these things rather difficult. So again, I do want to shout out to all our loyal listeners who have been tuning in for every show. It's not that we've forgotten you or we just don't want to do this podcast anymore. It's just logistically speaking, it's just been kind of difficult to find time to get it done over the last few weeks. So we're still trying to workshop our scheduling and stuff here. And once we get to a point where we're able to, successfully work, get our schedule synced up, hopefully we can start doing these episodes together more often. Again, as I said, this is episode 168. It's Monday, June 15th here, just about 1 o'clock in the afternoon is when I'm recording this. Episode 168, I said that three times now. That is for the 168 Logan Webb trade rumors that we're probably going to be hearing between now and August 3rd. In fact, just before I started recording this episode, Ken Rosenthal posted a story on The Athletic saying the Giants are, looking into being sellers. They haven't fully committed to being sellers yet, but they're certainly trending in that direction, and they're starting to, explore potential trades they can make. But they don't have any intention to trade Logan Webb, and that's where we're going to start off with today because I'm going to be honest. I do not want to trade Logan Webb. That was a long pause there. I do not want to trade Logan Webb. I'm just going to start off with that right off the bat. He is a guy who, again, if you are looking to trade him, he would absolutely jumpstart this rebuild that the Giants are sort of in, probably need to be more in on. And he would absolutely help out certain teams like the Brewers and the Braves and the Rays. The Rays, by the way, have five pitchers in their top 10. Who any one of them could probably be a boost to the Giants farm system in their pitching development there. But I just think what Logan Webb brings this clubhouse is just irreplaceable. He is truly a leader in this clubhouse. And I've said it numerous times, I don't think there's anyone in that clubhouse who wants to win more than Logan Webb. And that is a guy who you want leading your team. That is a guy you want around your young pitchers. That is a guy who preaches a mentality that you want players around him to have. And what we saw him do in his last on Sunday and really his last three starts, the way he has played stopper for this team in these losing streaks, the seven innings he pitched in Milwaukee, the eight innings that he pitched against Washington earlier this week, the eight innings he did against the Cubs this past Sunday. That is very hard to replicate. And that is a guy who just has so much value and meaning to this team, both on the field and off. He's just a guy you want in your corner. And he's 30 years old. He's not a max effort pitcher. and that he doesn't throw as hard as he can every single time. He is, I was having this conversation with Bonte Hill over the weekend. He's a guy who pitches. That's what Bonte said. You know, he doesn't need to just blow you away. He actually can hit his locations. And I think Logan Webb profiles as the kind of pitcher that will age well into his 30s. And I absolutely think that he is someone who can be around and help, you know, the next great Giants team be competitive. So right off the rip, I don't want to trade Logan Webb. And that goes into my own, you know, just my own personal feelings about him. He's been, again, a four-time guest on this podcast. I've gotten, you know, chat with him quite a bit. He's a great guy. I like having around. He's one of my favorite guys on this team, probably my favorite Giant on this team right now. So as emotionally as a Giants fan, I don't want to see him go. If I take the Giants hat off and put on the neutral baseball observer cap, though, like I see the logic in wanting to trade him. You could get a bevy of prospects for a guy who is, again, a top of the rotation starter. He's a number one starting pitcher on at least half of the teams in baseball, maybe more. And he has shown, again, in a small sample size that he can perform on the playoff stage. And I mentioned those teams earlier, like the Braves, the Brewers, the Rays. He would slot perfectly into those rotations and be a massive asset for any of those teams. Especially since, again, the big jewel of the crown jewel of this trade deadline is probably going to be Tarek Skubal with the Tigers. And once the Dodgers get him, Logan Webb will be the prized possession of this deadline for any team that is willing to claim him or able to acquire him in a trade, not claim. If I'm the Giants, though, again, it sounds like they don't want to trade Logan Webb, at least right now. And I get that. He's a very popular player. And I think the Giants are very reluctant to move popular homegrown players in trades like this. We've seen this in the past, most recently Madison Bumgarner in 2019, or even before then when the Giants absolutely could have gotten a haul of prospects for him. I mentioned on the Morning Roast last week that there was a rumor of an Acuna for Bumgarner package floating around 2017, 2018, something like that. But the Giants didn't want to do it. The Giants didn't want to move off of Madison Bumgarner in 2019, in part because they wanted Bumgarner to finish out Bochy's last season. There's an emotional reason to that. And there is an argument to be made that not trading Madison Bumgarner when they had the chance to do so, it really set them back in terms of rebuilding this franchise. And by moving off of Logan Webb, you could really inject a lot of talent into your minor league system, which is what the Giants need, particularly on the pitching side. And so it makes sense, but at the same time, and again, this is something Keith Law said in the Morning Roast a little while ago, you know, the Giants, they're not that far away. They do have talent in this farm system that's coming up. And I don't think that this is a team that is 3, 4, 5 years away from being competitive again. This is a team that can absolutely be in the mix again, I think, by as soon as 2029, which we're going to see a lot of these young shortstops, Josar Gonzalez, Johnny Lovell, Luis Hernandez. You're going to start to see those guys matriculate up to the big leagues. Hopefully some of these other pitchers in the system, whether it's Carson Wisenhunt, whether it's Blake Tidwell, you know, they can start delivering on the promise of, you know, what the Giants see in them. And Logan Webb going into 2029, that'll be his age, I believe, going into his age 32 or 33 season. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, I do think he has the profile that will age well into his 30s to where he could help that 2029 Giants team be more competitive than they otherwise might be without him. And so the fact that he can stick around as long as he can, his contract is very team friendly, which I think makes him more tradable, but it's not going to be hard financially to hold on to him. But it's also, I think, just what he means to this organization. He has truly become the face of this organization as much of the face that a pitcher can be, you know, until Bryce Eldridge fully takes that mantle from him. But he is just the leader that you want in this clubhouse. He is a guy that I want my young pitchers gravitating to. You know, he's in that corner of the clubhouse, him and Robbie Ray, and right next to him is Landon Roop, Trevor McDonald, any other young starters. Who else is, you know, you got all the other young relievers. Some of the young relievers are around him there. He's a guy who you want your young guys to gravitate to and set an example in terms of just how you comport yourself on a day-to-day basis and go out and try to win baseball games. And I'm just not ready to move on from that yet. Now, if this season truly goes off the rails more than it already has, maybe that conversation changes. At the same time, if one of these teams, again, the three I mentioned, Brewers, Braves, Rays, or another team like the Yankees or any other team that's in contention, the Mariners, I think, as well. If a team comes to the Giants with, you know, what they call a godfather offer, I'm going to give you an offer you can't refuse. If they do get one of those offers, the Giants do, I think, owe it to themselves as a baseball organization, a professional baseball organization, to listen to those offers. But if I'm Buster Posey, I'm not calling up the Rays and saying, you know, give me your best offer that you can give. I'm letting the Rays call Buster, you know, or if they're talking to, if they're in a conversation about Luis Arraez, oh, hey, you know, while we're talking about Luis Arraez, well, how about Logan Webb? If another team approaches you with an offer for Logan Webb, I think you have to listen to it if you're the Giants. And if you do get offered a deal that is truly too good to refuse, you know, then again, I you might have to pull the trigger on it if you are the Giants. And forget what I want emotionally. Forget what fans want. If you truly are, as Buster Posey, if you are truly, your goal is to do the best moves possible for the Giants, then simply put, you have to make a move that is best for the Giants, even if that does mean making the heartbreaking decision to move off of Logan Webb. So again, that's my thoughts on the idea of trading Logan Webb, who had a great outing yesterday against the Cubs. Again, eight innings, gives up the one run on some fielding issues there. You know, there was a little blooper pass Casey Schmidt down the first base line, tries to overcompensate, tries to throw the lead runner out at third, ball skips away, runner scores, 4-0, becomes 4-1. What are you going to do? Logan getting into a little bit of trouble there in the seventh inning, when the run scored. He gets into trouble again in the eighth inning of yesterday's game. And Tony Vitello comes out to talk to Logan Webb. And there's a moment he walks out. Tony doesn't make a motion to the bullpen. So that's your first sign that we'll see what happens here. Goes, there's a conversation. Tony turns around, walks away. Logan doesn't leave the mound. And there is a loud cheer from the crowd. You know, there was an ovation. They wanted Logan to stay in. And here's what Tony had to say yesterday after the game about what he was intending to do when he went to go talk to Logan Webb and the rest of the Giants infield on the mound.
Yeah, I mean, I've never, you know, never gone out without either the intention of moving on to the next guy or at least have a conversation. I wouldn't have tried to give him any pitching tips or anything like that. That would have been a mess going out. So, no, just walking out was to meet him at the mound, give a timeout, if anything, but then also check and see where he's at. The ball was coming out good out of his hand. Obviously, you kind of watch the pitch count, and we're further along in that whole deal with the IL stint, but just to see what he wants.
So Tony was asked pregame. That was Tony postgame, but Tony was asked pregame what he would do in a similar situation as Monday night where Logan's rolling. Do you let him keep pitching or do you take him out? I'll get to Monday in a minute, but Tony said straight up, like, it'll be his decision. We'll see where he's at. And when Tony walked out to the mound, again, Logan was pitching pretty well. I think he was at 105 pitches at the time, approaching that career high, which is a little bit higher than that. And it was like, all right, let's see what this decision is. And my thought was just watching how Logan was pitching is he's going to, you know, Tony's going to look Logan in the eye and see where his ace is at. And knowing Logan, you knew that he was going to tell Tony, I'm good to go. And if Logan's saying he's good to go, I am taking him at his word that he's good to go. And Tony Vitello took him at his word that he was good to go. And this is, I think, that is just good managing there, where you can be able to trust your ace and be on the same page as your ace and show your ace, hey, you say you're good. Well, all right, I'm going to give you that leeway to prove that you are good to go. And what was probably going to happen is we were going to probably see him, Logan, pitch to maybe one or two more hitters. If someone got on base, then Tony would go back out and take him out of the game. And then so next batter, Michael Bush, hits one down the right field line. Jung-Hoo Lee makes one of the great catches of the year. And Logan's day is done. Everybody's happy. He gives Jung-Hoo Lee a loving pat on the butt on the way out the field, says, I love you. Thank you for your defense. Jung-Hoo Lee, after the game, loved his mentality. Just, yeah, you know, I knew Webby wanted to finish the game, finish that inning, and I wanted to get that catch for him. So I like that Tony left him in. And again, going back to Monday, I guess we've learned later there's been some miscommunications there. Logan comes out after the eighth inning. Justin Message goes up, shakes his hand. Good job, which is usually a sign that a pitcher's done. Tony asks him, hey, are you good to go in or not? And that's where things kind of got hairy there. And I'll say this. If Logan Webb is ever in a situation where he's like, it's your decision, or let me rephrase that. If Logan Webb ever says anything other than don't take me out, then I'm willing to believe him in that maybe he's just, the arm is just done for the day. Maybe he doesn't have anything else to give on that particular night, which happens. You know, not every night is created equal. I've talked with him a lot about this. He said that, you know, you pitch 30 times a year, you know, a third of your starts, you're going to have all your stuff. A third of your starts, you're going to have some of your stuff. A third of your starts, you're going to be grinding to find your stuff. Every night is different. Every night your arm's going to react a little bit differently. And so if he's not saying, give me the effing ball, then that's my cue to believe that, all right, it was time for someone else to come in. Like, Logan Webb is the last guy on this team who's going to leave anything out there on the field. He will not leave chips on the table. And so was there a miscommunication on Monday? Maybe. It sounds like it. But clearly they've learned from whatever happened on Monday night, and Tony trusted his guy. And when that conversation happened, well, on the mound, here's what Logan Webb said it sounded like.
Chappie said, great job. And then Tony was like, you good? And I think I probably said some cuss words, but in the end I said, I'm good. And all the guys behind me were like, F yeah, let's go, sort of thing. And Tony walked off the mound.
And Logan, before that, was talking about, you know, the decision to come out and Tony and whatnot. And he brushed off any notion that there was issues about whether he should have came out of the game or not on Monday, and said there's just communication and anybody, you know, trying to make anything of it was just looking too much into it, which I don't know, maybe there's a subtle shot of Steiny and Guru. But, you know, again, and I remember Guru came up to me during that Tuesday and was like, what's going on? Why did Logan come out? And I told him exactly what I just said here on this podcast. No one is taking the business of Giants winning more seriously than Logan Webb. And again, that's why, all the more reason why I just don't want to trade this guy. He, like, you cannot just move off of a leader like he has truly become. And it has been so fun watching him grow into the leader that he has become there. And again, as Tony Vitello takes further command of this clubhouse, I do believe that Logan is in Tony's corner. Logan had every chance to throw Tony under the bus after what happened on Monday night, and he did it. He showed his respect to his manager by not doing it, saying, hey, you know, Todd went to him, said it's your decision, and it was, you know, ready to watch Keaton pitch. And he's still standing by his manager. And Tony said after the game that, you know, they may not be buddy-buddy, but they are still on the same page. They are still in communication a lot, which I'm fine with that. You know, a player doesn't have to be best friends with his manager. I mean, for people listening here, how many people who are listening to this podcast would say they're best friends with their own boss or their own manager for where they work? But at the same time, you may not be best friends with your boss or manager, but you still get along with them well. You still work with them well. You still talk with them well. I'll even say, you know, my relationship with our boss, Matt Nahegan, at 95.7 The Game, you know, we're not hanging out on weekends together or golfing or anything like that. I mean, granted, he's, you know, a little bit older than me, has a family and stuff like that. But he and I, we talk all the time about, you know, station related stuff. And we chat all the time when we're at work about what's best for the morning roast. And, you know, my boss Nahegi and I, we work very well together. We get along very, very well. And I think we are on the same page for a lot of things regarding our show. And if that's the similar relationship that Logan and Tony have, I think that's a good thing. And maybe one day they do become very buddy buddy, working together consistently. Assuming, again, Logan doesn't get traded anywhere or gets extended beyond the 2 years that he has left on his contract. So, again, love what I saw from Logan Webb yesterday. Hopefully he keeps doing it again. He's got a 0.39 ERA over his last three starts. Again, that's the start against Milwaukee, the start against Washington, and then the start this last weekend against Chicago. And that was after, of course, his first start back in Colorado, where I think he went like five-ish innings. And now he seems ramped up. I wonder how much that knee issue was bothering him in the first month. But again, whatever you can salvage out of this season, having a healthy Logan Webb will go a long way to making that happen. Again, though, if the Giants are also going to find any sort of momentum in this season, someone else other than Logan Webb has to pitch well. And that brings me to two of the Giants' younger pitchers here. I just want to spend a couple minutes talking about them. Landon Roop and Trevor McDonald. And no, I'm not going to get into that Landon Roop conversation. I'll say a little bit about that at the end. But with regards to Roop and McDonald, both who have been struggling a little bit over their last eight starts, Landon Roop, a 5.77 ERA since May 1st. Again, that was eight starts ago. Trevor McDonald in that same period of time, also eight starts since May 1st, a 4.64 ERA. And both of those guys, I thought, were a little all over the place on Friday and Saturday night. Roop over this last month plus, a 2.91 batting average against, whereas Trevor McDonald, a 2.44 batting average against, so not as bad there. Roop, again, I thought, a little shaky at times. The last month and a half, it's been really tough to watch Roop pitch, because he was a guy coming into this year that you thought could really kind of anchor down the middle of this pitching rotation and kind of make that jump from young starter with promise to young starter who belongs here at this big league level. Cause he was such a positive for this rotation last year. And, you know, he really seized these rotation roles when he came out of the season, spring training last year. And he just hasn't been able to build on it quite yet. If you want to be optimistic about Landon Roop, though, you can look at some of the, you know, the ancillary numbers or some of the more predictive numbers. And that is, he's in since May 1st, again, as I mentioned, he has that 291 batting average, but he's got a 391 batting average on balls in play. For those who don't know how batting average on balls in play works, or BABIP, just a quick rundown. Basically, the way you read that is, if you're a pitcher, the higher your BABIP is over 300, that means you're probably getting some bad luck. Balls are just kind of finding gaps in the defense and getting down. That's why you're getting hits. The more under 300 a BABIP is, that's a suggestion that balls aren't finding holes or guys are making good plays behind you, and you're getting a lot of positive luck there. In regards to the former, it means you're probably going to have some regression back to the mean. Some of those balls will not find holes, will not get through, and your performance will improve. If you're further under 300, it means you're probably going to have some negative regression. Eventually, some of those balls are going to find their way through and become hits, even though they weren't becoming hits before. With Roop's situation, it seems like he's been getting snake bit by a lot of bad batted ball luck. I want to say that slowly, because all those words sound the same. That's also corroborated by his 3.18 FIP, fielding independent pitching, during that same stretch, where again, FIP, very similar to BABIP, where it can be very predictive in terms of just whether or not you've been lucky or not in the results you've been having. Regards to FIP, the higher it is above your ERA, the more likely it is you've been getting lucky with what's going on, because fielding independent pitching, or FIP, measures kind of things that are beyond a pitcher's control. So it takes away home runs and strikeouts and things of that nature, and is purely based on what happens when the ball is put in play and the players have behind you have to make a play. A 3.18 FIP compared to a 5.77 ERA over the last month and a half suggests that Landon Roop has absolutely been getting some buzzard's luck with balls hitting to play, bad defense behind him, guys not getting the balls fast enough. And it would suggest that at some point, this performance is going to even out a little bit. Now, it's not all on what's going on behind Landon Roop. I think another big thing we need to see from Landon, we saw this a lot on Friday night against the Cubs, he's got to be more efficient with his outings. The pitch count is getting up way too high, way too fast. It's the third, fourth inning. He's already hitting 70, 80, 90 pitches. He's hitting 100 pitches going into the fifth inning. And Friday, you saw a lot of foul balls from Landon Roop on Friday night against that Cubs lineup. There's a lot of situations where he could not put guys away on when he had two strikes. And when you keep getting longer and longer at bats and throwing more and more pitches to any hitter, you're going to be prone to mistakes. And that's when things start to go south there. So the next thing I want to see from Landon Roop, need to get that pitch count under control. Need to be more efficient with what you're doing. This is a guy who, again, if you can make it five innings, that's awesome. But can you stretch things out a little bit? Can you make it to the sixth inning? Can you get into the seventh inning a little bit? Take some of the wear and tear or some of the pressure off of this bullpen to lessen the wear and tear on it. Need to control the walks, too. In the 39 innings that he's pitched since May 1st, he's given up 18 walks, which is about one walk every other inning. That's too many. You can't be giving up free passes like that and giving away rallies for free. So these are the next things that Landon Roop needs to work on in his development. And again, I am kind of curious, I think he's around 70-ish innings pitched on the year so far. He threw 106 last year. And he is on pace to pitch well over 150, 160 innings, which would blow away again that previous high of 106 that he had last year. And it is only midway through June. So I am curious to see how the Giants manage his workload the rest of the way, because I can't imagine they're going to just let him go get close to 200 innings. My guess is he'll probably top out at around 140, 150 innings as they start to, you know, build up his arm strength for the rest of his career. Because again, remember, this is only his second full season at the big league level. There's still a lot of pitching left in this young man's career. It's just a matter of, again, just can he kind of smooth out some of these rougher edges of his game? Because I think Landon Roop is a guy who can absolutely slot in and be a very reliable three starter for a future Giants team. If the next great Giants team has him in the four spot in the rotation, I think that's all the better, because then that shows that there's some really positive pitching depth for that future Giants team if he is in that situation. Trevor McDonald, he's been a little bit better with the walks in his last eight starts, 42 innings pitched, 15 walks in that time, a 244 batting average, and a 304 BABIP and a 388 FIP. Again, that goes with that 464 ERA in that time. Trevor McDonald's issue I see with him, first off, he was a little bit more wild on Saturday night. He seemed a little bit off from the jump on Saturday, and that's not just because he gave up the home run to PCA, Pete Armstrong, with the first pitch of that game on Saturday. But he was a little bit wild on Saturday night. He tried throwing the changeup a little bit more and had trouble finding the zone with it. The only issue I have with McDonald right now is that he really only has two pitches that I feel like he feels like he can truly throw with confidence. And that is the sinker and the slider, which is common, I think, for a lot of pitchers his age. But unfortunately, it makes him a little bit too predictable of a pitcher, and guys can adjust to you a lot quicker. The next step in his game is using that cutter and changeup more and being more effective with those pitches. He did use those pitches a little bit more on Saturday. They got knocked around a little bit. Again, I mentioned the changeup, which he was a little bit wild on. He gave up that double to Seiya Suzuki that scored a couple runs. And those are just natural progressions of a young pitcher of his age. And we've seen flashes of how good he can be. I don't think he's ever going to be a top of the rotation starter, at least not right now. He could, again, prove me wrong and develop into something that we'll see where that goes. But again, I see him as a back of the rotation starter at some point in the future. That being said, I want to see more of both these guys. I would much rather see Landon Roop and Trevor McDonald making consistent starts for this team rather than Tyler Mahle or Adrian Houser, two guys who I don't think have any role in the Giants' future beyond this season. Mally's obviously on a one-year deal. Adrian Houser's on a two-year deal. So if Houser can start pitching a little bit better, that would be terrific, because that makes him, I think, more of a tradable candidate at the August 3rd trade deadline, or maybe he gets moved in the offseason. I see those two guys as nothing but placeholders until some of these younger pitchers do matriculate up to the big league level. And then we get to see some of these young guys like Carson Wisenhunter, Blake Tidwell pitching a little bit more at the big league level. But we're not there yet. So with McDonald, can he just expand the pitching repertoire a little bit, get some better consistency with that changeup, with that cutter? If he does that, I'm very curious to see just how good of a pitcher he could be. So both of those guys are still in my rotation right now. It's concerning seeing some of the growing pains they're going through, but those are growing pains. That is how growing pains work. And, hopefully it doesn't last too long. Hopefully both these guys are able to kind of have a breakthrough at some point and start delivering on the promise that we saw in them when they first came up, when the Giants first drafted them. Moving off of those guys here, let's talk about Rafi Devers for a little bit, because a year ago today was Father's Day and the big Rafi Devers trade that happened moments before Sunday Night Baseball. I was at my dad's house. We were going to watch Giants Dodgers for Father's Day together. And I get the notification. Oh, I'm sorry. What? Giants just got Rafi Devers? Who? What? Where? When? Why? How? And what then followed was probably the most the one Giants Dodgers game that Giants fans cared about the least. I don't think I paid attention to anything in that game other than when they interviewed Buster Posey during that game about Rafi. I spent that entire game as the Giants were losing to the Dodgers just doing a deep dive on Rafi Devers' stats, because I was so excited to see this legitimate bat coming to the Giants. And here we are a year later, and yeah, the record has just not been good with Rafi. I should have written down the actual record before I started this podcast, so sorry about that. That's poor planning on my end. But, you know, I don't need to get too much into the numbers. I think we've all seen the numbers, and they've been very underwhelming. It has not been a super enjoyable time with Rafi on this team. I mean, this team was 12 games above 500 when he joined the team. They finished 81-81, and now they're 14 games below 500 here at the one-year mark. So of all the concerns there, there are a lot of them. The strikeouts are a concern. The streakiness is a concern. We had Justice De Los Santos on the Morning Roast this morning. We asked, you know, his thoughts about the Rafi trade a year later, and he didn't want to give a grade because he wants to let these trades play out. And yeah, there is something about letting these trades play out before we make a full-on conclusion. And sometimes a year is not enough time, especially for a guy like Rafi, who's going to be around for the next 8 years right now. But what stuck out to Justice in terms of what's concerning about Rafi is the lack of walks.
One thing that stuck out, and it's kind of been interesting this season in particular, is the lack of walks. Because last year it was a career high in walks. It was 112 walks. His previous career high was 67. This year he's on pace for 50. And what's been really weird is that he's swinging a little more at pitches outside of the zone. But what's really stood out is that pitchers are attacking him in zone more than they ever have. Right? It's roughly 50% of the pitches that he sees this entire season have been in the zone. And that's the highest percentage since he was a rookie in 2017, which means that pitchers are challenging him more, essentially. And, you know, when he was in Boston in 21, 22, 23, 24, he was making pitchers pay for challenging him. And he just hasn't been able to do that this season.
So I did some digging there while Justice was talking. And yeah, over the last year, it has been pretty rough with Rafi in the walks numbers. A 7.5% walk rate this year is very much the lowest since his rookie year 2017. And a 30.3% strikeout rate, that is a career high. He is on pace for just close to 210 strikeouts this season, which I believe might be a single season Giants record if he does get to that number. In nine years with the Red Sox, he was a 279 hitter. He's been a 235 hitter ever since the Giants acquired him, and they are 69-93 with Rafi in the on this team since they acquired him. That is not nice. Again, the lack of walks a year after he had a career high in walks is very concerning. Justice talks about also the amount of times that he's been challenged by pitchers and how they're pounding him in the strike zone. He's seeing more pitches in the strike zone than he's ever had before. Rafi was brought in to be an imposing presence in this lineup. And when the bat that's supposed to be the most feared bat in your lineup is getting challenged more than ever in that, you know, player's career, that is concerning. That is concerning that the fearsome bat is not being feared by opposing teams. And he is kind of being overwhelmed now with how much he's being attacked in the strike zone. He had a red hot month of May. He's cooled down greatly in June. And I did a little deep dive trying to figure out, like, what's going on with Rafi this month. I talked to Tony. I asked Tony about it on Friday night, and he didn't really seem all that concerned about it. He talked about how, you know, Rafi's leadership has really gotten better over the last few weeks and months. You know, but he says, you know, since May 1st, he's overall been a very good player. Problem is, since June 1st, he hasn't really been a very good player. And so when I see him getting just attacked in the strike zone so often, and again, doing the deep dive, trying to figure out, you know, what has been going on with his swing. Is there something different there? The swing patterns are all the same, you know, this month versus last month. A lot of the batted ball data is the same in terms of how hard he's hitting the ball, where the ball's going when he does hit it. But, you know, whether it's opposite field, whether he's pulling it, where he's going to, you know, straight away, all that stuff is the same. The only thing that's really declined in June versus May is contact, which, like, duh, we're seeing that. Like, he is swinging the bat, but not hitting the ball. And so, is that a suggestion that pitchers are pitching him differently this month than they were last month, and he's just not adjusting? It's concerning. It would just, a bat that this team relies so much on to be so streaky, you need something a little bit more reliable there. And that just hasn't been the case. Now, are there still some kind of growing pains of him adjusting to his time in San Francisco? That's always possible. I do think there is something to be said about, you know, ballpark factors as well. I thought that his swing would play well in Oracle Park just because his ability to go the opposite way. And, you know, the highlights I saw, he banged a lot of balls off the top of that green monster when he was in Boston. And those balls that he, and I'm talking like high up the monster, not the lower part of the monster, like high up the green monster. And those are balls that if you hit them here in San Francisco, those are home runs to left field. And he has had quite a few home runs to left field. His grand slam a couple weeks ago was a home run to left field. I also think that short porch and right is something he should be able to take a lot of advantage of. When it comes to the ballpark factor, though, I do wonder if maybe he's just better served in a warmer situation or a warmer climate. A lot of games for the Giants are played in the cold, you know, marine layer, you know, and those Friday night or Monday, Tuesday night games, Saturday night games occasionally. Whereas during the day, you know, in San Francisco, you could have some very warm days. You know, it was a warm weekend a couple weekends ago when the Giants were taking on the White Sox and he hit that grand slam. It was, you know, a bit of a warm weekend this weekend. Unfortunately, the Giants had two day games. So maybe that plays a part of it. And this is a guy who, again, this season has an 838 OPS in day games versus a 616 OPS in night games. Does he like warm weather? Maybe that's a part of it. I don't think it's also a part of just the ball travels more when it's warmer versus when it's colder. And playing in Boston for as long as he did, yeah, Boston does get cold in the winter. It can be cold there in April, and it can be cold there in September sometimes, and or in October. But in Rafi, again, history of starting off slow in April, maybe it's just a matter of the fact that, like, Boston being a warmer city than San Francisco is, you know, the reason why we're seeing, again, part of the reason. I'm not going to say it's the reason, but like a lot of things, there's a lot of things at work here that play into why Rafi is hitting like he is here versus like he did when he was in Boston. And I don't think there's any one thing that has, you know, the most weight out of anything else. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say the ballpark or the weather is exactly why he is struggling. I'm also not going to say it's just how pitchers are pitching or just what he's doing. It's, you know, Joe Shasky, he likes to use pie chart of culpability. There's a lot of factors at work here. And I don't know if I could tell you straight up which one is the greatest factor, because I think it can sometimes change from time to time. So I do think that he is committed to being here. I think he enjoys being here, but it just hasn't really worked out the way that we expected. So a year later, though.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
Would I do the Rafi trade? I'm not sure I would, to be honest. And this is something I go back and forth with a lot because I love having him in this lineup. When he is on, he is so fun to watch. But stressing over which Rafi we're going to get is just not fun. And that's before you factor in the Bryce Eldridge component of it. You know, Joe Shasky made a great, comparison today on the Morning Roast, comparing Rafi and Eldridge to Monte Ellis and Steph Curry. And I think that's a perfect comp because those are two guys who played similar positions, and just them being together on the roster just did not work. At some point, I feel like we're going to hit a day of reckoning when it comes to Bryce Eldridge and Rafi Devers, where they might not be able to coexist on this roster together. Now, we're probably a ways away from that. At some point, Rafi is going to have to be a DH-only guy, or he's just not going to be able to play the field as much as he is right now. And Rafi's defense has been very good this year. But with the emergence of Bryce Eldridge, there is a part of me that believes that it would just be simpler going forward if you just had Bryce Eldridge at first base DH and didn't have to deal with the stress of what you do with Rafi Devers. Now, what you do with Rafi going forward, watch, hold on, before we got to about going forward, I think the other half of it is also what's become of Kyle Harrison as well. And that is not as big of a factor in terms of why I would not do the deal again. Again, Kyle Harrison really was underwhelming for a lot of his time with the Giants, and credit to the Brewers for figuring things out with him. I think what stings more about Harrison isn't so much anything to do with Harrison himself. It's that the fact that the Giants traded Kyle Harrison because they felt comfortable in some of the young pitching talent that they had alongside of him, namely Hayden Birdsong and Carson Wisenhunt. And Hayden Birdsong, again, as soon as Rafi got traded, Birdsong's game went to hell. And no one could have seen that coming. And it all culminated with him undergoing Tommy John surgery. We're not going to be seeing him for a while, unfortunately. That's kind of a hard thing to see coming. The other half of it is Carson Wisenhunt. When he was called up last year, he really did not show the promise that a top pitching prospect like of his ilk would show. You know, he came up and he's a fastball changeup guy, a little bit of a slider, but he needs more variety there. And last year, that fastball, you know, was coming at 92 miles an hour. It topped out at 95 once. The changeup got hit around a little too much, so he ends up becoming basically just a fastball guy. With a 92 mile an hour fastball, that's just not going to get it done. And so I think that it's not just that Harrison has gone on to have success with the Brewers. It's the fact that the two young pitchers you had behind Harrison haven't really developed more since then. And that's another part of the reason why, again, going back in hindsight, it's hard for me to say that I would do the Rafi trade again. But it happened, and there is no going back and undoing it. He is here for now. What do you do with Rafi next, though? It is a very difficult trade, a very difficult contract to move. There's over $250 million left on this deal for the next 8 years, and unfortunately, I don't know if his game is going to age well into his 30s. He is eventually going to be a DH-only guy, and things are only going to go further and further south from there. If a team does call him calling, again, the Yankees, I think, could be an option. Maybe it's the Phillies. Maybe the Mets go crazy and they want to get him. But I think the Yankees are probably the best fit where they can acquire him. Maybe they put him at third base. I don't think they're liking the production they're getting from Ryan McMahon right now. And the Giants would probably have to take McMahon back in this deal, too. And McMahon's got another deal left on his contract with the Yankees. The Yankees, of course, got him from the Colorado Rockies last year. So that would probably be a part of it. There is a part of me, though, that if you could figure out a way to move off of this contract, I go back and forth on this. There are days where I want to hold on to Rafi and make it work. There's days where I'm in the mentality of what I'm saying right now, which is I think you do need to move off of him if you can. If anything, just to make things simpler for your development of Bryce Eldridge at first base and DH. I think that's just the easier move there. And you can put Bryce at first or Bryce at DH. You can move Casey Schmidt out of the outfield. You probably have to put Casey at first base, which I don't know if that's his best position there. So maybe Bryce is your first baseman, Casey's your DH. Again, I don't think Rafi's the perfect guy to trade. Again, I think that roster-wise, I've said that it's Matt Chapman, but I also want to have Matt Chapman around here too. So it's a very complex situation here. But I will say this, Joe, with Rafi, the returns a year later have not been inspiring. I don't think he's going to get traded, whether I want it to happen or not, which means the next best thing that we can hope for is just that, you know, he finds himself here and is able to kind of become the hitter that he was in Boston, or at least as close to it, because a 235 hitter now versus the 279 hitter that he was in Boston, that's such a stark difference there that that needs to be corrected there. So there are some other things I wanted to get into in this episode, but I ended up talking for too long. So we're probably going to call this episode here right now. Last thing I do want to say, I do want to address kind of the elephant-ish in the room of the Pride hats here. And I was there on Friday night, and I heard Landon Roop's comments on the Bible verse that he wrote on the hat. To be honest, I don't really want to get too deep into the weeds on this. I don't want to get too deep onto what Landon said. I feel like this is just one of those issues these days where everyone is just so ingrained in where they're at on it. You know, everyone is very much, you know, curse you, Landon Roop, or they're going to be, yeah, you go, Landon Roop. And I don't see a lot of middle ground in this conversation just because of how these conversations go these days as a society. It's an unfortunate situation, but it is a reality. And I don't want to speak on to how Landon felt about wearing the hat in his comments and how he should or should not think. All I will say is this, and I wanted to say this on Saturday on the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap, and I apologize for not doing that. Also say is just happy Pride Month, happy belated Pride Weekend to all of our friends in the LGBTQ community. I believe that baseball is and always should be an inclusive sport. If you love this game, if you like this game, if you're a fan of this game, I believe that there is a place for everyone in the game of baseball to come and enjoy this game. And so that's all I will say on that. This has been episode 168 of the Garlic Fries and Baseball Guys podcast. Maybe we'll have Steven Rizzotto on for the next one. Who knows? We still got to figure out our scheduling. So thanks to everyone for tuning in. And don't forget, Dodgers suck.
Data centers don't wait, and neither should your supply chain. From power and connectivity to racks and critical power, Graybar brings the products and the experience data centers need now. And with deep inventory and logistics expertise, we keep projects moving from first delivery to final install. With hundreds of locations and a nationwide delivery fleet, we help you bring facilities online on time and on budget. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.